So the subject is the debate of love and death. It's Savitri is a marvel, and I don't know. I must acknowledge at the beginning that I won't be able to do justice in a short span of time. It's a subject for a whole week-long workshop. So nevertheless, we'll just dip into it from here and there. And I presume that everybody is familiar with Savitri, so I'm not going into the background. There are several ways people look at Savitri, and it's based on the story of Savitri and Satyavan as narrated in the Mahabharata and also the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. And it's a story of the Vedic cycle. And like many of these stories, it's one of those symbolic stories which reveal a deep, profound truth about human existence. So what is the deep, profound truth? The deep, profound truth is, to start with, there's so many ways to start it, that we are not alone. We just heard about this souls plunging into night and the contract in footnote. He said, I'll come along. So that's the relief. So God is not just up above, but He labors with us. He has become this world, and this makes a world of difference in our understanding and relating with this world of forms and names and all the forces that operate. So we are not alone, and Savitri is the story of one such manifestation of the divine or the avatar of the divine mother. We often, when we speak of avatars, well, we only think of the masculine forms of the avatar, but the feminine has also been there. She has either stood behind as the Shakti, or she has stepped in the forefront when something new has to be done. So Savitri is one such manifestation of the Divine Mother, and Sri Aurobindo connects this story to the present manifestation of the Divine Mother. So she opens door to a partial possibility, and the Divine Mother takes this possibility to a complete possible fullness. So we can take it that Savitri initiates the divine project of conquest over death, and the Divine Mother comes to to fill in all the gaps and to ensure that this is just going to be now round the corner. So this is basically the theme. And so there are several characters, each of them symbolic. Not going into it, let's come to Savitri and death. So what is death? There are several ways of looking at death, each valid and each partial in its own right. But very, very simply, psychologically, death is the past. It is the law. How is law created? We say things will happen. If we do this, then things will happen that way. And this law can go on from having a sore throat to death, to problems in life. Either it's a karmic law or a physical law, or some law or the other is always operating. So death is the law which is holding us back from surging into the future. Because the moment we say, this is possible, no, this is not possible. You see, as a medical doctor, you tell people, no, it's possible to probably, be immune without the vaccine. No, this is not possible. The law forbids. So you see, death is all that has gone into the past. How does it become the law? It becomes the law because mankind evolves around certain grooves of habit. Mother says, even death is a habit. And we all know that. You start something, and then after some time, it becomes a habit, then it becomes a law. So law is the habit, and I'm not discussing good habits or bad habits, but it's a habit. Probably good at a point of time, it becomes a problem at another point of time. For instance, taking care of the body in a very morning, you wake up, take a bath, all this is a very good habit. But if you fly transcontinental, it becomes a problem. So, law due to habit, and this law which has gone into the past, which includes religions, which includes ideologies, which includes our conceptions of God, each valid in its own time, becomes a stumbling block toward the future. So, who is Savitri? Savitri is the future. Look at the name. So, law, death is called as Yamaraja and Dharmaraja, both. We will not go into the Dharma aspect. Yama means restrainer. He doesn't allow you to go. You can't cross the red line. You may say, I am in a hurry, I have a problem. Somebody, no, you will pay the fine. So Yama is the restrainer. What is Savitri? Savitri is the first, not even the first dawn. She is the light, the sunlight which you sense when darkness is still there. You have that sense that it is morning. That's how we sense, no? When we wake up, oh, it's morning. But the light is not yet there. So Savitri is that sun which is emerging out of the darkness. And there are beautiful stories in the Rig Veda and everywhere connected with it. So we'll, for the moment, I have to restrain my own, urge to flow with all these countless stories. But nevertheless, we come straight to this. Savitri is the future, just as the light of the sun brings the future. But we habitually go on with the past. We don't take it as a possibility to recreate ourselves. We don't say, okay, yesterday I was like this, but today I'm going to be better. We say, what can we do? That's how we are. So this is where we can take it in very modern terms, if you want to put it, the past which resists and the future which invites. And we are like caught in between the two, one leg forward toward the future. But if we don't lift the left leg, or whatever, one leg is in the future, if we don't lift the other leg, we'll be stuck. So death is the sticky past which hangs around us, doesn't want us to go forward. So we go straight into it. As I said, I have to resist the temptation several places, because Savitri is a marvel, magic. It's not a book. That's why I have actually noted everything on phone which I should read, because it's a vast subject. So I did that little labor. But still, the book must be there, at least by the side, because it's not a book. It's magic, it's marvel, it's a presence, it's a living word, it's the word body of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Just keeping it by the heart has magic. And again, so many wonders I know. One was of a Swamiji with following, running into many more than Sri Aurobindo. Okay, and with many more centers all over the world. But nice person, he calls me, he had a lot of high regard, and I am traveling, every time I travel by air, I get this air sickness. So what should I do? I said, it carries Savitri with you. He doesn't understand much of English. I said, just hold it. So he said, okay. So when he landed, he gives me a call. He says, Alokji, what a magic you told me. I was just holding, first time in my life I never had an air sickness. Now, this is not to propagate miracles, okay? I don't believe that. But just to tell you, it's a living consciousness. It should not be treated like a book. So that's how it is. So first thing first, I'll just read a little thing from here and then go on to my phone. So basically, we have this idea of God. Everybody says God is one. So I love to poke my nose and say, but which God? Problem starts there. I'm not even talking of religions, labeled religions, but even in the same religion, even in the same path, you have different conceptions of God. For example, I've heard people say, oh, mother is angry. Mother herself has said that, I don't judge people, I don't condemn. But you'll hear, mother is angry. In followers of, oh, this man got punished because of this reason. This is not mother, it's mother of our own conceptions. And mother herself has said that's why when people do these things, that's bad enough. But when they use my words as a quote, that makes it worse. So here is the God that death has imagined. That means in our past, the ideas of God. So he says that, well, he says, if you worship me, death is saying, huh? He's a very boastful fellow. If you worship me, I'll grant you release. Because actually, you know, you think that God is this and God is that, but he has given sorrow and suffering so that we can remember him. I am always shocked when people believe this. Who could be more perverse than giving you sorrow so that you remember him? Just imagine a good human being won't do that. A decent human being. But this is the God that we have conceived. And much worse things we all know have been done and are being done in the name of God. And then we say all gods are one. God is one, but our conception, this is the image. So Savitri first sets the record right. Who is this God imagined by thy night? You have not seen God. You are just imagining. We often imagine God according to our ideas. Oh, he will punish. This fellow did something wrong to me. Why should he punish? He will change him. That we don't like. If God says, I am going to change this fellow. No, you must first punish. Because your heart is not as vast. So we create such gods. It says, who is this God imagined by thy night? Contemptuously creating worlds disdained. Who made for vanity the brilliant stars? See, this was the question that Queen raises. Now, how Savitri answers? Narada has answered in one way. But how Savitri is answering? She says, Who made for vacancy, vanity, the brilliant stars? Not he who has reared the temple of my thoughts and made his secret floor my human heart. Savitri says, excuse me, you don't really know God. That's why you are saying all these things. So she has discovered God, and what is this God that she is revealing to us? Now I come to my phone. This was just to initiate the reading from this wonder that is Savitri. Okay. Who is this God imagined by thy night, contemptuously creating worlds disdained? Who made for vanity the brilliant stars? Not he who has reared his temple in my thoughts and made his secret floor my human heart. So it's very important that when we start with the conception of God, obviously, what is our conception of the divine? As is our faith, so he will receive us. That's what the Gita has said very clearly. Yo yatha mam prapadyante. As men approach to me in whatsoever faith, so I. So it's very important. What is our conception of God till we have discovered? So she says, my God is will and triumphs in his paths. Means there is nothing impossible for grace. Mother says, my child, you think your difficulty is so much. You know why? Because you're hypnotized by yourself. You don't believe in grace. So she says, my God is love and sweetly suffers all. He drinks the poison. And he doesn't say, oh my God, this fellow has given me poison. He gives us a smile in return. So sweetly suffers all. To him I have offered hope for sacrifice and gave my longings as a sacrament. All my longings, all my hopes, basically I have given to him. I am not depending on you and others or even the gods or even human beings. No, I depend on him. Who shall prohibit or hedge in his course? The wonderful, the charioteer, the swift. Says, you really believe you can stop him? And then this idea that, you know, even in the darkest hell, he descends. That's how Shubhendu writes in one of his poems. Oh, thou who pervadest all the worlds below yet sittest above, master of all who work and rule and know, servant of love. Oh, thou who disdainest not the worm to be nor even the clod, therefore by that humility I know thou art God. We know thou art God. So see what is this God? He doesn't thrust us into hell and says, hell, go to hell. He doesn't do that. He says, I'm coming with you. I know you have to go, but I'll come with you. So there he says, his steps familiar with the lights of heaven tread without pain the soot-paved courts of hell. There he descends to edge eternal joy. Actually, hell cannot be hell if God is with you. That the whole story of the lost footsteps, Antonio Silvio Curiaso, I may be mistaken in the name, where he is in the concentration camp and Sri Aurobindo comes to him repeatedly, he is going to commit suicide and he changes, he started feeling bliss. And he used the name, he couldn't get the name, Sri Aurobindo Ghosh. He used the word Robin the Ghosh. It's a lovely book. And he was in bliss. All the tortures meant nothing for him. So you see, it is not just a euphemism or just a cliche. It's a fact of experience. The eyes of love gaze star-like through death's night. The feet of love tread naked hardest worlds. See that image of the Purusha. Adabhyam Prithvi. But surely that is a wonderful way of saying. We have heard that God's feet are on earth. Padabhyam Prithvi. But see how Sri Aurobindo is putting it. He says, yes, eyes like stars are gazing down, but the feet are treading the hard courts of earth. He labors in the depths, exults on the heights. He shall remake thy universe, O death. So it's not this human being, that human being, even if there is no human being. That's why, this yoga, even if there is nobody who has done it, still if this is the calling, the aspiration, go ahead because she is with us. That's what. Now death is not going to give up so easily. So he asks, what is thy hope? To what dost thou aspire? It's new to him, news to him. So, whom are you aspiring? Who? And he ends up by saying that I am the only fellow. Jolly good fellow or bad fellow. I am the only one. Everybody comes back to me. This is the fact. So, Savitri's reply. And he has logic. Death is not just a graduate. He has done PhD. In theology. So, he is now going to quote all these scholarly articles. So he says, but if there were a being witnessing all, how should he help thy passionate desire? He says that I have heard in books that he is a witness. How is the witness going to help you? He is only seeing everything. Aloof he watches soul and absolute, indifferent to thy cry in nameless calm. He says, I have read the Sankhya philosophy. Savitri is the Purusha watching. He can't help you. You are trapped in this world. Then he says, I have read Advaita also. His being is pure, unwounded, motionless, one. Ekameva dvityam. One endless watches the inconscient scene. Where all things perish as the foam, the stars, the one lives forever. There no Satyavan changing was born. And there no Savitri claims from brief life her bribe of joy. There love came never with his fretful eyes of tears. Nor time is there, nor the vein washed of space. He has read Advaita also. He knows the Nirvana Astakam very well. Shivoham, Shivoham. He says, see, so he is PhD in theology, that fellow. All the things about, it wears no living face. So Arya Samaj also, he says, what is this? God can be born upon earth. All other religions, it's much worse. I'm talking of, the ultimate. It wears no living face. It has no name. No gaze, no heart that throbs. It asks no second to aid its being or to share its joy. Now what he is doing is twisting a truth, by the way. It's not that these things are not true, but they are partial experiences. Not samagram maam of the Gita. The Gita says that you must know God in his totality. Samagram maam. They are truth, but death is using it to distort. So that's what the, as they say, the devil quoting the scripture. So he says, if thou desirest immortality, okay, Savitri, I understand there are people who desire like that, they go to Himalayas. They don't come to hell to chase their loved Satyavan. If thou desirest immortality, be then alone sufficient to thy soul. Live in thyself. Forget the man thou lovest. My last grand death shall rescue thee from life. Then shalt thou rise into thy unmoved source. You have heard all this from authorities. Savitri replies. She knows God. See, that's why, that's the difference between a knower and a reader. We read all the books, but knowing is a living experience. So she said, O death, who reasonest? I reason not. Reason that scans and breaks but cannot build, or builds in vain because she doubts her work. Then she says, who she is? I am. For she says, I am. I exist. I know who am I. I love. I see. I act. I will. That's all she says. And death, as always, she says, I know. You are a simpleton. You have not read the books, the scriptures, all them. He is a fellow like that. So he says, know also. Knowing thou shalt cease to love. And cease to will, delivered from thy heart. He says, you know your problem. You are too much passionate in the heart, but you have not read. If you read all these sacred scriptures, you will understand. So he advises Savitri, no. And what is Savitri's answer? But Savitri replied, for man, to death. She is a representative of us. When I have loved forever, I shall know. And there is a logic in it. Love in me knows the truth all changings mask. He says, I know. Knowledge is oneness. How do I arrive at oneness? Through love. Love can pierce every mask. That's why they say that, you know, falling in love means you've been made a fool. It's better to be made a fool in love, at least time to time, than to be sane and wise. Because see, this is what love does. That's the magic. Even you have the worst person and you are blinded, you see God in the person. Isn't it wonderful? People say, oh, this is so stupid. No, it's wonderful. Afterwards, reason comes and says, no, see, this person, that person starts the play. It focuses on the mask. But what does love say? Love sees the truth inside. Even the person does not know why he or she is treating me like a god. And he starts actually believing my physical personality is like a god. There are so many stories in Indian thought. The five women who are regarded as sacred, whose remembering, whose names in the morning was considered that they will give inspiration. Who are these five women? Anyone knows? Other than Savitri, of course. These women are Ravana's wife, Mandodari. Bali's wife, Tara. Imagine. Draupadi, married to five husbands. How can it be? That's where the magic and mystery of love. Okay. So she says, I know that every being is myself. In every heart is hidden the myriad one. What a sutra, if only this we could, you know. And then she calls names to death. You see, we all do name calling, but when the divine does it, how he does it? So he brings the divinity, touch of divinity everywhere. So he says, you know, we have these passages in the Mahabharata also. Again, resisting my temptation. When Sri Krishna suddenly tells someone, Moodha, you claim to be intelligent, but you are talking like a fool. So how does he say? She addresses death as an aesthete of the sorrow of the world. You see that people who make so much about tragedy, this world is so bad, so horrible. And then after all that philosophy, they ask, by the way, what is there in food today? And you tell them their favorite dish, then all tragedy goes out of the window. So anesthete of the sorrow of the world, champion of a harsh and sad philosophy, thou hast used words to shutter out the light. Now this is where that how we distort the scriptures. So she says, and called in truth to vindicate a lie. A lying reality is falsehood's crown, and a perverted truth her richest gem. So we should be careful. Just because somebody says, yes, yes, I believe in God, this is where the lying reality comes in. I believe in a very intolerant God who doesn't allow any other belief to continue. Is that really God or a monster? That's called a lying reality. There is a God and you may believe in God. But that doesn't mean that this is the God you believe in. You are believing in a monster and you're using the word God. So she is saying a lying reality, because it becomes worse. Because you immediately get a sanction. Oh, it's a religion. It's not a religion. It's a monstrous thing. It's a perverted thing by any means. But this is how it, see, it becomes crown of falsehood. Nobody will say anything. Why? Because it's, well, it's a religion. It's not religion. A lying reality. And a perverted truth, her richest gem. O death, thou speakest truth, but truth that slays. I answer to thee with the truth that saves. And what is this truth? One very simple thing that Sri Aurobindo has said, something so obvious, is that the world is constantly changing. Great ones have said that. But this change has a direction and a purpose. That changes everything. Otherwise, if you just see it changing, anityam, asukham, lokam, of course, Sri Krishna, so wonderful. It's constantly changing. The Buddha, it's transient, yes. But look at the marvel that with transient things we build immortal truths. Vyasa's Mahabharata, the Gita, Sri Aurobindo's books, transient things, pen, typewriter, even the body, the fingers. But what is released through all this is immortal truths. So it's true that there is transience, but it is even a greater truth that this transience is an instrument of the eternal. And it is constantly working on the transient, leading us towards something which is more enduring, a perfect image of truth. So we are all, as I said, we are all in the making, projects in the making. And it's like the image of Durga, which is being made. Very interesting that, you know, when they make an idol of Durga, the first mud they bring is from the brothel. And from 27 such places. Meaning thereby she represents the feminine. First mud is from the brothel. Without that mud, you cannot make an idol of Durga. Unless you make it in China market. That's a different story. So it's a process. And after making, in the making, then you have to install. There has to be an invocation. So we are all right now in the process. Maybe the mud of the brothel. And yet this mud has the potential of becoming the whole of Durga. This is the beauty of this whole thing. Assailed. So he says, O death, thou lookest on an unfinished world. Wait, wait, wait. Thou lookest on an unfinished world. God has not called his last shot. Assailed by thee and of its rodent shore, peopled by imperfect minds and ignorant lives, and sayest, God is not and all is vain. How shall the child already be the man? They are my babies. They are growing up. Wait. These children will grow up and look into his, your eyes, O death, and say, thou art not. So this way. How shall the child already be the man? Because he is infant, shall he never grow? So simple. Because he is ignorant, shall he never learn? Is man's evolution stuck here? Is it static? Is it a finished product? No. It's going further. And then she gives lovely examples. See, she, this is what happens. When you read too much, you lose common sense. And your logic becomes trespassing reason. That's how some people put it. How reason can trespass reason and you end up with the most irrational things. Plenty of examples of that. I'm resisting even in the field of medicine. You trespass reason. And you think you are being rational. That makes it worse. But when you don't get the mind cluttered, then there is a clarity of thinking. What does Savitri say? In a small, fragile seed, a great tree lurks. In a tiny gene, a thinking being is shut. Now you see the same logic. They say, oh, no, no, it's all genes. They say, yeah. Do you see the magic? A tiny gene will grow into a sage and a hero. What determines it? She's pointing towards the supermind without using the word here. That will be revealed later. A little element in a little sperm, it grows and is a conqueror and a sage. Then wilt thou spew out death, God's mystic truth? Deny the occult spiritual miracle? It is a miracle. Every day we see this miracle. Till date, there is no correct understanding beyond doubt how these genes operate with their switches on and switches off and randomly and replicate what they are meant to replicate. They act as if they are conscious creatures. And that's the whole, anyways, the dialogue. But that's where, still will thou say there is no spirit, no God. And so, she says, in God concealed, the world began to be. Tardily it travels towards manifest God. So what is God concealed? God concealed is, let's say I am going to make a, as I said, the example of Durga, an ideal of Durga, not an ideal, but a presence of Durga. Now, where is it concealed? In my conception. Nobody knows. You have the seed buried inside the soil. Where is it concealed? Or the farmer who is tilling the soil. So he'll say, what kind of wasteful thing you are doing? He said, no, a tree will come. A rose will come, garden will come. He said, what nonsense, I don't see any seed, tree, garden, anything. He said, come, you have to wait. Shall I dig and see where the seed is? He said, no, seed is held with me, I am going to plant it. And then if he plants it, and again the same fellow comes, where is the tree? No, not yet. So he says, I'll dig the soil. He says, if you dig it, the seed will be destroyed. You have to wait. So this is how this world is a conception and a birth, Savitri. It's a divine conception. It's not some fool's conception or a madman's conception. It's a divine conception and a birth, which is manifesting itself. And slowly it is developing towards the truth it is meant to be. So there is hope for all of us. Our imperfection towards perfection toils. The body is the chrysalis of a soul. We look at the body, we forget the butterfly is yet to emerge. The infinite holds the finite in its arms. Time travels towards revealed eternity. And he says, if you look at, people say, where is God? Where do I have to find him? Look at everything. Everything has a touch of divinity. All here bears witness to his secret might. In all we feel his presence and his power. Shubhendu, in who, how you'll narrate it? In the blue of the sky, in the green of the forest. Whose is the hand that has painted the glow when the winds were asleep in the womb of the ether? Who was it raised them and bade them to blow? And then he goes on to say, in the laughter of boy, in the strength of a man, in the beauty of woman, everywhere you see that. So he's here, she says, a blaze of his sovereign glory is the sun. You can pick up anything. And it can become an entry point for God. A glory is the gold and glimmering moon. A glory is his dream of purple sky. A march of his greatness are the wheeling stars. And some of these things you can't, like in flight I was watching how this color blue from that. It's so amazing. Nothing is there except this blue color. And you are lost in an epiphany of the divine presence, which is everywhere in everything. His laughter of beauty breaks out in green trees. His moments of beauty triumph in a flower. Beauty is his footprint showing us where he has passed. And religion is his footprint showing where he has paused. So, I'm talking of fixed, organized religions. where, you know, it stops with the whatever beginning. So his ways challenge our reason and our sense by blind, brute movements of an ignorant force. By means we slight as small, obscure our base. The atoms, for example, a greatness founded upon little things. He has built a world in the unknowing void. So, see, he said, oh, this is very good. But the fact is there is evil. Okay, come back. Don't digress. There are really wicked people. They are dangerous fellows. So he said, if mind is crippled, life untaught and crude, if brutal masks are there and evil acts, they are incidents of his vast and varied plot. His great and dangerous dramas needed steps. He makes with these and all his passion play. A play and yet no play, but the deep scheme of a transcendent wisdom, finding ways to meet her Lord in the shadow and the night. So you take the Ramayana, the scriptures which most are. So you don't remember Ramayana because, you know, oh, there was such a horrible incident. Imagine, you know, a modern, this is so, you know, woman is being tortured and all this. You know, that's how you're looking at a plot. But Ramayana is not remembered for that. Ramayana is remembered for the greatness of Rama and Sita, for the eternal immortal love, which survives flames, which survives separation, which survives kidnapping, which survives everything. Similarly, you see Mahabharata pick up something in middle. My God, what a horrible scene. No, Draupadi was being disrobed. Imagine if that time CNN, BBC, everybody flashed news. What has happened to this civilization? What has happened to these people? And just imagine, Drona was silent. Bhishma was silent. Oh God, this is Armageddon. This is Pralaya. Krishna was smiling. Wait, Mahabharata is not over. So this world is unfinished. So she reveals all this and then something beautiful. This world is born out of bliss, not out of desire. This is fundamental difference. This the Upanishad also puts it, where there is a dialogue between the guru and the student. He says that, raso vaisaha, this creation of delight. And that's why we see that even in worse situations, human beings find ways and means to be happy. All that you need is to give them a pack of cards. They'll play solitaire. They'll find ways and means. That's how human, a hidden bliss is at the root of things. Not desire, as is told. Not Maya suddenly tricking someone. Not a cheat. A mute delight regards time's countless works. To house God's joy in things, space gave wide room. To house God's joy in self, our souls were born. But before we can be ready for the ultimate game, we have to go through the steps. The ultimate game is the greatest adventure. The divine and its manifestation. But we are not ready. So we have to start with, you know, practice matches. If you can't play practice match of cricket, how will you play the real test match? You have to go through. That time you'll be hurt. That's how my ambition to be a cricketer was crushed. I thought I played very well because I played for the school. But they said, okay, let's try whether you're good enough for the state level or not. And the bowler bowled first ball. I was out. Second, I was out. I couldn't even fathom where the ball coming from. And I thought, I believed seriously that I play well as an opener. So, after three balls, I said, you know what? Change of career. I know all about cricket and I'm fairly impartial, so I'll be an umpire. So that's how my cricket career changed into umpiring. So that's how you have to prepare. You can't. You enjoy. But see, there are people who have prepared themselves through it. And now when they reach, they are enjoying. You know, when a fast bowler, they are hitting a six and, you know, everybody is taking delight. Oh my God, what a shot. It could have blown off his head. But you tell a cricketer, are you mad you are playing this? You say, you don't understand the delight. Ask a mountaineer, ask a wave surfer, and they will all tell you, you don't know this joy. You do one thing, you just take bath in your little pond. So, at last the soul turns to eternal things. In every shrine it cries for the clasp of God. Out of the void this grand creation rose. For this the spirit came into the abyss. And now some marvelous lines. She reveals the truth, which is so evident, as I said, to anybody with common sense. In deaths, so why we have come? In night's bare session to cathedral light, in death's realm repatriate immortality. Immortality has been exiled, you know. We have to repatriate it back. It belongs here. Come here. Now, it is a mystic, slow transfiguration works. All our earth starts from mud and ends in sky. Today someone was asking about someone. Do you think he was really a sadhak? He had this problem, that problem. But yes, this part is okay. As a, you know, people bring into their understanding what they carry within. Some see the mud, some see the lotus bloom. That's how it is. All our earth starts from mud and ends in sky. And love that was once an animal's desire, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart, an ardent comradeship in the happy mind, becomes a wide spiritual yearnings space. So it's an evolution of love. If you stifle love at the beginning, it won't. See this. Again, story of Valmiki. You know how he wrote the Ramayana, how he became a poet. He became a yogi, all right. He sees a pair of birds who were mating. And they're hit by a hunter and they die. While dying, they release some very wild cry because it's agony and pain. And he witnesses it. And suddenly out of the heart of Valmiki, a poet arose. And he writes something which he himself doesn't understand. And then Narada, as usual, comes and says, you know what you just told? Or Brahma, he goes to Brahma. He says, what is this? He says, you know, this inspiration has been given to you to write the greatest love story. Unfinished yet complete. It starts from where? From the animal, from the birds mating and dying. But see, you will see this reflection all through Ramayana. It goes ultimately to, though separated, yet Sita and Rama are inseparable. You can't think of one without thinking the other. A lonely soul passions for the alone. So the entire evolution of love, I'll just read these few lines again. And love that was once an animal's desire, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart, an ardent comradeship in the happy mind, becomes a wide spiritual yearning space. See, the Lord knows everything. Huh? Sri Aurobindo knows all that we go through. A lonely soul passions for the alone. The heart that loved man thrills to the love of God. A body is his chamber and his shrine. Then is our being rescued from separateness. All is itself. All is new felt in God. So if we don't love even a human being, how do we expect that we love the divine? If we don't love the creation, how do we expect that we will really love the Creator and discover him in all his totality? Love is that power. So, say that when man has evolved to that point, then shall the business fail of night and death. It says, you are doing good business, but one day it is, you are doomed. And so she goes on, marvelous line, but she says that one thing important is that love is that great power, but it must change its human ways to make it divine. Yet keep its sovereignty of earthly bliss. You're not saying that ways divine means come, we both will sit and meditate. Earthly bliss in every aspect of earth, that love should come. Dealing with equipments, dealing with instruments, dealing with material things. Everything should be an act of love and therefore an act of joy. My teacher taught me how to check the pulse. And he said, check the pulse. And I, like a smart student, picked up the hand and took it. He said, young man, have you never held a lady's hand? I said, sir, no, but I don't know whether to add unfortunately or fortunately to it. He said, that's not how you do it. And he showed me the art of simply lifting the hand. I said, oh my God, this will relieve a patient before I have checked the pulse. The way I am doing it, he is waiting. What's it? What's it? But I realized that if you hold the hand nicely, the person feels comforted. I mean, good doctor's hands. See, there are small little things. It's an act of love or it's a job. So everything should be an act of love. So that's what sovereignty of earthly bliss. Love must not cease to live upon the earth, for love is the bright link twixt earth and heaven. Love is the far transcendence angel here. Love is man's lean on the absolute. You know, death is a... goes on arguing. He'll keep, but, you know, like the eternal skeptic. So, he ends up arguing. He says, okay, all this story of love I don't want. Because he's a cold, stone-hearted fellow. So he says, I am only law, and in law there is no love. Law is law. It's written in my rule book. I go by the rules. All this love story can be before you come to law. And you come to law. So he says, what is that law? Oh, human face, this death is speaking. That's why it's so dangerous to quote Savitri. You know, somebody may quote this passage and say, sure, Abindo Savitri. And one may take it as truth. But this is death speaking. Oh, human face, put off mind-painted mask. He says, all this story and hairy-fairy things here. Mind is painting mask. The animal be, the worm that nature meant. All our schools are teaching it still. I have a term for this. Hiranyakashipu's gospel. Matter is everything. All these are fine, nice things. But really speaking, you know, they are emotions, they are serotonin, they are aberrations. Real stuff is hard matter. Accept thy futile birth, thy narrow life. For truth is bare like stone and hard like death. You know, there was a whole movement of realism in poetry and everywhere. And that realism was to bring out the darkest, barest aspect. That's not truth. That's... maybe you want to say an aspect, but it's a mask. You have not seen the totality. So, the mother says something very beautiful. She says, truth is supreme harmony and delight. I said, thank God. It's not bare stone. Truth is supreme harmony and delight. But death says, quote unquote, for truth is bare like stone and hard like death, bare in the bareness, hard with truth's hardness live. You have done this karma, you got to suffer. Mother says grace can completely annul karma. And why not? Where matter is all, their spirit is a dream. If all are the spirit, matter is a lie. The second and third chapter of the Life Divine, summarized in two lines. And who was the liar and who for the universe? And he says, see, you are talking of God. He forged this universe. The real with the unreal cannot meet. He who would turn to God must leave the world. Everywhere we keep hearing this. He who would live in the spirit must give up life. He who has met the self, capital S, renounces self, small s. And that's why the mother says at one place, what has Sri Aurobindo come to tell us? He says, Sri Aurobindo has come to tell us that one need not leave the world to find God. One need not leave life and enter into limited relations. He is everywhere and in everything. If I do not find him, it's because I have not taken the care to discover him. Okay, so finally he says what most of these, ultimate atheistic philosophies. If God there is, he cares not for the world. What will I do of a God? He doesn't care about the world. All things he sees with calm, indifferent gaze. He has doomed all hearts to sorrow and desire. He has bound all life with his implacable laws. He answers not the ignorant voice of prayer. Dream not to change the world that God has planned. Strive not to alter his eternal law. Now he comes, he says, this is the law. I am the guardian of the law, Yama. So Savitri has to remind him, you are the Chaya, the shadow of Surya. That's the story, mythology. Yama is the shadow child of Surya. And as long as we are in ignorance, he has this law. But there is a greater law, the law of truth, which is what supramental, which is not like this hard law of Yama, which takes joy in giving us pain. That's why the law of truth must prevail. Hiranmayena patrina satyasyapi hitamukham. Because that law of truth can change our world. So that's what Mother and Shurvindo's work. And so Savitri reminds, this is Shurvindo's yoga, metaphysics. I don't like to use words, metaphysics, philosophy, give it a like a very, as if he thought out these things. He saw them and he is sharing with us. The world is not cut off from truth and God. This is the greatest falsehood, the mother says. To cut this world from truth and God, to create an unbridgeable gulf. In vain thou hast dug the dark and unbridgeable gulf. In vain thou hast built the blind and doorless wall. Man's soul crosses through thee to paradise. So he says, well, there is nothing like that. Even beyond death, the journey continues. And then she has her own logic. If in the meaningless void creation rose, if from a bodiless force matter was born, if life could climb in the unconscious tree, its green delight break into emerald leaves, and its laughter of beauty blossom in the flower, if sense could wake in tissue, nerve, and cell, and thought seize the gray matter of the brain. She studied all this. It's not that, you know. And soul peep from its secrecy through the flesh. How shall the nameless light not leap on men? And now she is giving the hint toward the future. And unknown powers emerge from nature's sleep. See, with the coming of man, new unknown powers emerged. They recreated the world. Animal would have never fathomed that you can paint, you can write, you can have a computer, you can go to Mars, wherever. You would have never imagined. So there are these powers which are going to emerge. Even now, hints of a luminous truth like stars arise in the mind, moon, splendor of ignorance. Even now, the deathless lovers touch we feel. If the chamber's door is even a little ajar, that's all is required. What then can hinder God from stealing in, or who forbid his kiss on the sleeping soul? So even while we are in ignorance, sleeping, keep the door a little ajar. You can come in. I am asleep. But don't knock. Don't wait for me to call you. Drop in. Break open the door. Invade me in my privacy of sleep and fill me with thee. That's how. Already God is near, the truth is close. Because the dark atheist body knows him not, must the sage deny the light, the seer his soul? So that's where we have the famous, once when Swami Vivekananda was asked, he says, but Shankaracharya doesn't say so. He says, yes, but I, Vivekananda, say so. He says, I am here to reveal my truth. You have your truth, you are fine with it. There is no argument. And another, I think it was Swami Ramtirtha. So people after a talk told him, oh, hold on. I have heard you all, okay, fine, little above the head. Tell me, are you meaning to say that you have a soul? He says, no. So then what are you saying? He says, I am a soul. I have a body. He says, you got me wrong. I am a soul. I have a body. See, the whole thing changes. And then she gives him a good lesson on, you know, the beauty of Shrivindo's yoga. A lonely freedom cannot satisfy a heart that has grown one with every heart. How can we be selfish to seek a lonely freedom? I am a deputy of the aspiring world. My spirit's liberty I ask for all. So this had answered one of my queries after reading all this. I said, but mukti is a very selfish act at the end of the day. I'll escape, but what about countless who are going through real pain in real time? I said, this is not my path. So all this, everything is fine, high philosophy, good. But at the end of the day, you escape. So Sri Aurobindo brings this new possibility. And then therefore he says something again we can notice. I'll just take 5-7 minutes more slightly. I'll exceed the time. Please allow me. Forgive me that transgressing time because of the pressure of the timeless. So in the casual error of the world's ignorance. Now she is showing us. Look here. This world is built by random bricks of chance, you see? And chance created out of dust man who is traveling to the stars to gather dust from there. Chance, okay. Wonderful. If that is chance, I would prefer to call it a hidden intelligence. That's how she puts it. In the casual error of the world's ignorance, a plan, a hidden intelligence is glimpsed. That's how Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin. Many things have been like that, serendipitous discoveries. How the chance works. There is a purpose in each stumble and fall. Nature's most careless lolling is a pose, preparing some forward step, some deep result. Somebody who is not moving, doing nothing, aimlessly wandering, probably he is just about to discover the road less traveled. And somebody who say, I am on a path. Who knows? These million discords dot the harmonious theme of the evolution's huge orchestral trance. So this is what we see today. Discords. It's like, you know, if you watch a big orchestra, the one I have seen, the biggest I have seen, they must be bigger, was of 300 people. So you see that for a long time, each set is playing his own, and if you think it's a discord, yes, because those each one has to do his job. And then the conductor says, okay, ready, ready. And then, you know, so that's what is Auroville, the difficulty and the harmonious end. If our souls could see and love and clasp God's truth, this is the condition for each one to participate. Its infinite radiance would seize our hearts, our being in God's image be remade, and earthly life become the life divine. Very interesting. I'll just copy till here, so it's perfect timing. But I'll read these lines again. So what is the condition actually? That all this is wonderful. What is our take-home point? What do we have to do? Well, he's the doer, he will do. But what is that point where things will be done? Can I in some way? So we must know, if at all, what is needed. It's not by mental, all kinds of theories and, you know, bonhomie. It's not by that. You can create unity by putting people together and say, now dance together. So, you know, one will do Bharatanatyam, the other will do, you know, rock and roll. And you know what is going to happen. So, but how is it that gopis are able to dance in perfect rhythm? What dance are they dancing? They are dancing because each is dancing with Krishna according to Krishna's footsteps. And when we do that, we automatically create harmony. Harmony is union in the mother. You discover your own rhythm with the eternal. Dance. Somebody else's rhythm. Then when the grand orchestra or the grand dance plays, then everywhere there is the divine and the dancer. He is the eternal dancer and following his footsteps. That's why you see, we have Tandav Nitya, Bharatanatyam, Mohini Attam and Odissi and all these. What was the dance Krishna danced with the gopis? Not Garba. Okay, Garba is the closest. I'm sitting in a Gujarati home. I can't. But see the Garba dance? Everybody is just changing partner, going here, there, and you know. But this is a super garba. So, what is that dance which Krishna danced? Ras. So it is called Ras Leela. How do you put? Anybody teaches Ras Leela? You cannot teach Ras Leela. You can teach all other dances, including Shiva Tandav, but not Sivalasya, by the way. Shivaya is another dance which nobody does. But you cannot teach Ras Leela. Ras Leela begins when Krishna is there. It cannot be with anything or any. And then you have to just obey Krishna, the divine. He is dancing, you have to keep pace, and he will ensure. That's what is Ras Leela. It's the dance of delight. Ras is the dance of delight in the unfolding. So, if our souls could see and love and clasp God's truth, three things required. See is not like seeing that vision, but see, yeah, there is a point like that. See, yes, what Sri Aurobindo says. See, and then love. Do we love it? Without love, all meditation, this technique, that technique, it doesn't make sense. Love is what matters, and love. And then clasp God's truth. Clasp God's truth means, I want this now, nothing else. I'm ready for my ego to be lost and everything, but I just want God's truth. If our souls could see and love and clasp God's truth, its infinite radiance would seize our hearts. That's the only problem, that it has to be in freedom. I want you. Our being in God's image be remade. And when divine embraces you at the end, after that embrace, you will never be the same. Frankly, even in human love, an embrace does that. When there is a deep love and two people meet with that love, they are changed. The change doesn't last. That's a different story. But the divine embrace, it changes us for good. Remakes us. After that, we cannot seek anything else except for that. The touching story of Surdas is blind saint, and he suddenly, he is a saint who remembers Krishna and Radha, and one day Radha comes and gives him light in the eyes. And he says that, well, he sees suddenly. And whom does he see? Not the world. He is born blind. He sees Radha. So, she asks, ask any boon that you want. He says, take away these eyes. He says, after seeing you, I cannot see anything else. Shurbindo's devotee will say, give me those eyes that I see you everywhere and in everyone and in everything. So Surdas is that. We have to go one step further. So that's what he's describing, last two lines. Our being in God's image be remade, and earthly life become the life divine. It's only when human beings are transformed and become in the image of the divine, that's what we are meant to be, that's what the Bible says, that's what the Purushukta says, that we are built in the image of God. But only the image is there. It must be filled with all the thought of God, the love of God, the life of the divine. And when that is filled, then our life, earthly life, become the life divine. Thank you so much, Jema. Mother has saved me. I was... okay. Jema.